Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast. It's episode number 232 and I am your host, James Gilmore. Joining me for this slightly knackered edition of the podcast is Mr. John Jordan. Hello, John Jordan.
Hello, James. How are you?
I am all right. Now, as anyone who listens to the podcast regularly will know, you were absent, have been absent for a little while, because you have been schmoozing with some of the more successful mobile game companies. You've been away in Finland, haven't you?
Oh, that was last week. Yeah, I was E3 the week before, wasn't I?
Yeah, you did that, and then you think you came back and gave us a brief rundown.
Did I? Oh, okay. I think so. I don't think I did.
It's a busy, hectic life you lead from plane to plane.
Last week I was in Helsinki with hanging out with I call them the Super Gung Ho Kings. that's who they are. So I was with Supercell Gung Ho, who are the Japanese developer behind Puzzle and Dragons, and King.com. So Super Gung Ho Kings, they're all making more money than they could put in the bank.
Exactly. Well,
actually, hilariously, so the whole point of this event, off track somewhat, is Supercell basically just making so much money, and they're in Helsinki, and they like all the Helsinki developers, and it was midsummer, so in the Nordic regions, so Finland and Norway and Sweden, all those kind of places, when it gets to midsummer, 21st of June, that's when their summer starts, and because they have such terrible winters, they really get carried away.
Oh, okay.
So it's like midsummer, it's like they're all out there in their kind of shorts and sandals. And actually, it was a really lovely day. So they had this kind of conference. There was some game stuff going on there. It wasn't just purely getting drunk, although that seemed to be a large part of it.
Naturally.
Some people, the after party started at 1 o'clock, and some people went back to bed at 4:30 in the morning. I was not one of them. I was jet lagged. It was hilarious and really kind of good to chat to the guys. But anyway, we bumped into Supercell's CFO, so their chief financial officer, at the bar, as you do. And he was very talkative, which I was quite surprised about, considering he's the CFO of one of the most profitable companies.
They can often be a bit cagey, can't they?
Yeah, and the Finns often can be a bit cagey generally. I mean, they're not the most sociable people until they've had a few drinks. Maybe he had, I don't know. But so we were laughing around, like, how was it like being the CFO of the most successful company ever? And he was like, you know, chatting around. And he said, so what did you predict that the company would do? And he goes, I'm the worst CFO in the world. I predicted that we would have daily sales of $10,000. And he goes, he said, the first day we launched Heyday, that was like completely blown out of the water. And now they're making about $1.5 million a day. I was like, what do you do with all the money? He goes, well, we just keep it in the bank, really. We can't really do anything with it. So basically,
we throw parties to celebrate the summer. And that's about it. We'll actually be covering that a little bit later in reference to a specific game as well.
Okay.
So there's much to be getting on with. But it's good to have you back. We're down Keith this evening because he's still working and doing things. And Peter's in Amsterdam.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Good old.
Doing Amsterdam things. I'll let your mind imagine what those things might be.
You're casting assertions.
Dispersions, delicious dispersions.
He's working. He's working. Yeah.
He's hard at work. He's hard at work. He was tweeting away and telling us he's visiting games companies and doing work related things. Of course. Well,
the weird thing is, it's KLM, the airline, are releasing a game.
Yeah.
Weird thing that they've been flying some people in from America, like first class. Someone I knew on Facebook was like, "Yeah, I'm in first class with KLM." I was like, "Oh, great."
Yeah, I heard talk of business lounges and things like that. So they're obviously putting on a good show. So we'll hear more about that next week. As for this week, we've got a whole bunch of interesting stuff in the updates. We've got some a very cool console game coming to mobile. We've got some bad news about Plants vs Zombies 2, and some insane news about just how much money some of these games are making. We'll tell you all about it in this week's news. First things first, we'll do the update as always. Ridiculous Fishing, that VAR fishing game, which isn't freemium, but Keith thinks should be freemium, even though the rest of us probably don't think it should be freemium. It's got an update planned for later in the year, which is apparently going to be huge, quotation marks, they say. Generally, people do tend to say that. They don't say we've got a small, crappy update coming. So don't worry yourself. But this one is apparently massive. It's going to be turning up, they say, sometime later in the year. They're not specific as to when. It's going to be free, but it's going to contain it's not going to be like an extra fishing rod or a new breed of fish. Apparently, it's like a whole expansion of the actual story mode. So they're going to explore different waters, so to speak, and really take the game kind of a big chunk further in a narrative sense as well. So you got that to look forward to. People, I think, are still playing this. I know some people are still playing Ridiculous Fishing. To be fair, I haven't played it much at all. I kind of feel like I should.
I find it kind of weird. I mean, like, the way they operate seems to be exactly against what everyone would say best practice operations are at the moment. So best practice operations at the moment are you go free to play, so yep. anyone can download it, and you kind of update. I mean, you might do big updates at a certain point, but basically you update a little bit every week or every
regularly.
Month or something.
Yeah.
They've gone paid, and then they've done, like, after a year, they're going to do one massive update, which is basically seems to be like pretty much an entire new game kind of thing. And it's kind of weird. I don't know. I guess the problem is they've been kind of, because they're kind of so vocal and the stuff that's happened to them, they get a lot of press for their things. But I think you'd kind of think any other developer doing the same thing would just vanish into the...
In some ways, it does sound like suicide. They're swimming upstream all the time. Another game as well, a game that's been running for a long time. We've got Heroes of Order and Chaos, which is Gameloft's great big online battle arena type game. They have added a new map. It's called the Underrealm Ruins. And it's a sort of 5-on-5 battle arena, so you can download that for free right now. There's also a couple of new heroes. You've got Lorelei? I don't know. It's all fantasy nonsense names. You've got...
made up names.
Arwen. She's the Green Guardian of Gaia, obviously. So you can play as her. And you've also got Jombra, with two A's, who is a badass planeswalker. You also get a couple of new items and tablets and things like that, too. So if you're still playing that, extra content there. The last update, which is almost kind of, in some ways, newsworthy... Jetpack Joyride. Well, yeah, I mean, as in, it's more than just this is an update. Jetpack Joyride is being updated. When is it actually coming out? No, it's actually out now. It can be bought right now. Halfbrick, the developers, Australian developers, have added a new vehicle. It's called the Wave Rider. So it's some water jet ski sort of thing, which in and of itself isn't particularly newsworthy. It's more the system they've chosen to employ, which is kind of interesting. You can get it now, but if you want to get it now, you have to pay £2.99 or $4.99. Alternatively, if you wait for 4 days, so if this goes out on Friday, if you wait another 2 days or something, you can just get it for free. So you're essentially paying for early access.
I mean, that's a weird in a way, but the weirder thing, I guess, is the price, because it's not... I mean, it's quite expensive, isn't it?
It's expensive.
$5 to get something for 4 days. That's
yeah. I mean, I understand that it's obviously a very big game, and if only a couple of people go for it, or you know, a small percentage of the users go for it, it still nets them a fair bit. But it does seem a lot. I mean, at 69p, people might be more prepared to just go, oh yeah, I'll get it. Why not? $2.99 is quite expensive for something that if I just hang on for, you know, like 100 hours,
and
it's
and the other
fine.
Thing is, I mean, some people might buy it like an hour before the update becomes available because they just might, you know, depending on how well it's kind of explained to them. That
yeah.
So you'd be pretty annoyed if you spent like $5 and then it's like an hour later, everyone else got it for free. Isn't it?
Yes, it would be a bit strange. In some ways, though, this kind of, I don't know how successful it will be for them, but this kind of model I can sort of get behind. The idea of here's something you can pay for it if you want it early, but if you're not that fussed and you're prepared to wait it, then you can get it, you know, a little bit later. Mm. That model seems to make sort of sense to me. So you're not essentially depriving people of stuff or forcing people to pay constantly. You're just giving people the option to pay for something to get it. To get first dibs, which sort of seems fair enough. I'm kind of, because I'm happy to wait for this to turn up myself, but if you're a super fan, then obviously you'll put your money down. So that seems to be a fair system, but it's like 4 days and the price of that does seem a little bit peculiar. I'd be interested to see whether that works for them or not. Probably one guy will have it early and be very, very pleased with himself. Okay, news now. You know Limbo. Did you play Limbo, John?
I did not, actually, no.
I don't know if it's your thing. It's my kind of thing. I played it. It was the 2D platform puzzler, monochromatic style, black and white, kind of eerie. In fact, it was one of the games that, or rather, probably was the game that reignited that particular visual style. After Limbo came out, you started seeing a lot of these you know, black foregrounds on colorful or black and white backgrounds, kind of out of focus eerie stuff. So on iOS you got a bunch of games like Lad, which was a direct ripoff of Limbo and was crap. You had but then you had other ones like Oscura and Totem Runner and things like that that used the same visual style, but were actually, they were quite good. This was the kind of thing that started them all off. After what's got to be, I think we're up to 2 years now, it's been out for a long time, it's finally coming to iOS. the original game. It appeared on Xbox Live. Yeah, 2010 it first came out. 3 years. Wow. It was in development for a long time. The studio behind it were Playdead. I think Finnish or something as well.
Danish.
It was
a troubled... In general, the whole thing was quite troubled from a production point of view.
It took a while to get to market, didn't it?
And then they kind of basically, it went horribly wrong after that. After they got massively successful, the people who owned the company kind of this. Anyway, yeah, it didn't matter.
Oh, dear. It didn't go so well for them.
It has now, but I think they had a difficult time.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I was actually a big fan of the game. I thought it started stronger than it finished. It was all, atmosphere, and there's no tutorials, and it just drops you into the world, and suddenly you're wandering around. The actual sort of physics and gameplay of it felt really nice. It's sort of slightly floating, slightly dreamy, but in a creepy way. There's a moment when a spider appears, which is kind of awesome, and kind of I felt the game sort of peaked, and then it didn't quite deliver anything as good towards the end, which I thought was a little bit of a shame. But overall, it was genuinely a really enjoyable experience. It was one of those ones I sat down and played. It was only kind of you complete it in 3 hours or so, and I started it at midnight one night and just played the whole thing. Yeah, I played the whole thing in one sitting, just because I'd been waiting for it for a while, and I knew it was the kind of thing I was going to enjoy. It got a lot of attention, certainly. It got very good reviews, and I think it was pretty successful financially, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, no, it's very successful.
Yeah, it did well. As one of the indies, the Xbox Live Arcade ones. Now it's coming to iOS. It's going to be appearing on July the 3rd, so next week, next Thursday, Wednesday? That's Wednesday, yeah. It'll be turning up. It's going to cost you £2.99 or $4.99. I can see it working because it's not one of these super Twitch, super sensitive platformers in the same vein as League of Evil 3, which we're going to be talking about later, which is very much a precision platformer. This isn't really that. This is more slightly looser in its feel, so I don't think it'll be too hindered by the iOS, screen controls. It's sort of simple, basic inputs, so I don't think it should suffer too badly.
I think it'll do pretty well. I mean, I think you've kind of found some of those kind of indie style games that were on kind of Xbox Live and those kind of distribution platforms. It's actually done pretty well. I mean, the weird thing is it's taken them so long to kind of seem to kind of get their act together and get them over to the iPad.
Yeah, well,
it's been surprising. I mean, I guess they tend to be quite small studios who don't necessarily have experience of doing mobile games.
Well, I mean, I don't know the politics or the allegiances behind it, but I know it took a long time for them to get over to PlayStation. It didn't turn up in PSN for a while. I figured they had some kind of, the exclusivity deal with Microsoft. Yeah. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, or whether they just haven't got their act together. Who knows? Either way, it will be turning up. I'm excited to see how it will play. I haven't played it through for a long time, so it'll be nice to dive back in and see if it stands up to the console releases. And if you haven't played it, this will be a good chance for you. I think it will fit well. The length.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd assume it'll find. I mean, presumably Apple will promote it pretty heavily, so yes. I think a lot of people will kind of like, oh, I heard about that and didn't catch it first time around or whatever.
Yeah, so. I think it was about 800 or 1200 Microsoft points, so it's about £8 or something.
Yeah, it's a bit cheaper. Yeah.
So £3 here or $5. That's reasonable, provided it plays well. We'll have a review up for you next week, no doubt. So check it out then. And yeah, something to look forward to, I think. From good news to slightly less good news, Plants vs. Zombies 2, which we told you about in previous podcasts, the new version of Plants vs. Zombies, again, it's been like years in the making. We noted it because it's gone free to play, which some people liked, some people didn't. It's been pushed back. It was supposed to be coming out on July the 18th. That's what we were told. Now they've said it's going to be coming sometime later in the summer.
Okay.
That's as specific as they're being about it. They took to Twitter and spoke about it. PopCap, the guys behind it, their quote was, they said they just want to make sure it lives up to fan expectations.
I mean, I have to say, I played a, I don't know exactly what version it was, but I played a version at E3.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed, I mean, there's a lot of game in there.
Really?
Pretty, and obviously it's a difficult E3 where they have sometimes people just make specific demos, so they make like a 5-minute demo which might not be in this finished game, just to give you an idea. Like Gameloft did that with like Modern Combat 5. They had like a basically using some of the locations, but you wouldn't really expect that to be in the final game,
right.
But it seemed to be that for Plants and Zombies 2, it seemed like everything was in there from what you could tell, because there's three this kind of three themed kind of levels, because it's about time travel. So you go back in time. I think you start in Egypt and then you go as a pirate one, I think. Mm-hmm. But you can just, you could see, you could, it was all open, so you could see just all the level stuff that was in there, and just a lot, you know, a lot of content. And there's like the kind of I guess the straightforward mission kind of arc you go through. And then there's these side quest things that you don't have to do, but obviously Plants and Zombies, people tend to be quite completists, so they're going to do that. Yeah. And it seemed really, as far as you could tell, I mean, you can't really kind of play it and get an idea of the balance and stuff, but it seemed pretty much kind of complete from what they were talking about. I kind of imagine with the free-to-play stuff is, even if you designed the game and got everyone to play it and gone for that process, it's a bit different going from the you know, 100 people in your company to 10,000 people who you might do a soft launch with, and you just get to see kind of really obvious mistakes that you didn't see for whatever reason. So
The free-to-play thing's always a bit of a work in progress, it feels. Yeah. Very often we get games where they release and then they tweak it. They change things, lower the prices, raise the prices, whatever. Yeah. Happened recently with Unreal Racing 3 and things like that, just because people go, no, we're not paying that. Or vice versa. Realize they've been too generous. Several stories of games recently that have essentially been too generous with their IAPs, and that's the reason they blame for the game failing. Whether it is or not, we don't know. But that tends to be the argument put forward. I don't mind too much when I hear that games are being delayed by a month or two, because it was fixed, you know. Yeah. No one wants to play a broken game, and I'd rather not download one and then have to update it, you know, immediately. So I don't have a problem. We obviously love the original. The original was hugely, genuinely, insanely popular. This is one of those sequels that I can see picking up a lot of traction. Sometimes we've talked about, like, Draw Something, where they've released Draw Something 2 now, and it's kind of, it appeared and then just vanished from the radar, pretty much. No one really cared about the sequel. It's like, I think we've said everything we need to say about drawing in Draw Something 1. There the story ends. Plants vs. Zombies 2, I can see.
I mean, I think the slight difference is, with obviously moving to a different model, it does kind of change. It didn't change the gameplay in that obvious way, but there are kind of subtle changes in the way you kind of use the bonus kind of stuff. So it is quite a big. I mean, I chatted to one of the producers about it, and they kind of obviously well aware of it. But I think when it comes out, people will be surprised. Because a lot of free to play games are kind of endless, in the sense that you know, like Clash of Clans, you just keep upgrading stuff in your base. Whereas this still has that kind of level based structure.
Okay.
And they've got kind of plans for like other worlds to come out as well. So it is, even though they're using free to play model, it's still quite a traditional kind of approach in how they're kind of dealing up the content. Obviously, you can play more.
Sure.
There's a certain amount of repeatability in there, another thing is I think it's a massive, obviously Plants vs. Zombies is a massive brand for PopCap, now owned by EA, and they, you know, you there's no point rushing it out, you know, putting it out there 2 weeks early and getting, you know, bad reactions. Obviously they had that Sims Online stuff. I mean, they really need to make sure it's as rock solid as it can be. So
with the time travel theme, it kind of opens the door for a lot of updatable combat. They've got, like, you know, three levels in there at the moment, three different time periods, and every update they can just bung a new one in, can't they?
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult for developers, because obviously something like Plants vs. Zombies, people are obsessed about it. So, you know, as soon as it comes out, within a day, people will have become obsessed. People will have literally completed the entire thing.
So you do
have this problem that particularly when you're making very high quality content like this, there's you know, the ability for your fans to use up your content is massively faster than the ability of the developers to actually create that content.
Sure.
So they do end up with a, you know, that kind of problem. But I think from the impression I got is they've got like one up. And I think going back to updates things, I think with these more games as services approach that people have now, a good company will launch a game and know within a month or two weeks it's got a content update. You know, it's done, ready to go. You know, and then they'll almost like be working on the one in a month after that, by the time the game's coming out, kind of thing.
Sure. They'll have the next one further down the line.
Yeah.
All planned out. Well, hopefully they can sort everything out for this late summer release, whenever that is. We'll obviously keep you updated as soon as we hear more. Better late than early and broken, as far as I'm concerned.
Looking forward to it.
I am. Mentioning the in-app purchase systems and how it tends to change gameplay. Last week we talked about Icebreaker, which got released, which is that first release from the Rovio Stars, little arm of Rovio.
Nice game, yeah.
It was a nice game. I reviewed it and everything, and I really enjoyed it. The weird thing that they did was that their in-app purchase system was such that it gave you access to these god powers. So these three or four additional things you can do where you can grab your Viking. It's a physics puzzler if you haven't played it. You have to basically chop Vikings out of ice using slice mechanics, which is it's really good. It plays really nicely, and it's kind of humorous too. It's fun. But the god powers, you can only get them via in-app purchases. They give you one in the game to say, look, this is how it works. And then after that, all of them are locked behind a paywall. So there's this whole element of the game that you don't get. Usually with games, they give you a certain amount and then maybe that'll run out and you can top them up. With this one, they just go, here's this element of the game. Try it once. And then beyond that, you can't have any unless you pay.
Yeah.
Which was kind of odd. It felt, I don't know, that seemed a strange thing to me.
Well, I think the part of the problem with that is it was a flash game to begin with, so it was designed to be completely free. And if you're taking an existing game and bringing it over, you kind of want to be, it's kind of, you don't really want to completely start again from scratch, which is, you know, effectively that's what Plants vs. Zombies have had to do. They've got a gameplay idea or they've got a theme and they've had to start again from scratch and think, how can we put free to play in it? And actually, I mean, they've gone for a similar route where you're kind of buying, you're not, as far as I can remember, it's going to have terrible memories. There is a consumable thing, but basically you're buying, you have powers in Plants vs. Zombies where you can like pinch the heads off zombies, mm-hmm. or you can like throw them up in the air. It's kind of like swipe mechanics to directly attack them. And that's kind of like you buy those items. I think, I can't remember if that's a hard currency or soft currency, but I think some people are, because for endless games like Clash of Clans or Heyday, where it is a kind of a time-based thing, you're using it to update things or you know, oh, it's going to take this long to build it unless you spend this money to time it up. Whereas for things where it's kind of more game-based, you end up having to go down the bonus item route, which is then very difficult because you don't just want people to spend money and finish, you know, and complete the game without any skill, particularly if you're trying to put some multiplayer aspect in, which some of these games tend to do. So it is, you do tend to find that there is this kind of like that's the broad divide. You go item-based or the kind of consumables thing. And it seems to be people are moving people are trying to move away from the consumables thing because it is an endless thing. It's kind of hard, you know, to kind of keep people engaged after a certain period of time. Because I've been playing Clash of Clans now for almost a year. You know, I don't really know why I do it, because as soon as I upgrade something, then the next thing is, oh, you can upgrade it again.
I've never been drawn to that. The consumable for me does feel like throwing money down a well to some degree. Because like you say, you never get there, do you?
You want some spending where people just, if they're really into the game, they want to get through it quicker or progress a certain level faster, they kind of can spend a lot of money. But equally, you still want some sort of more item-based approach to things. I mean, we can talk about a game I've been playing, and we'll talk about that later. But I think that's quite a subtle balance of how you do that, how you kind of mix in things like, say, a racing game, you buy a new car or you're buying petrol. And I think the games that are doing well are kind of mixing those two things up. You are buying items, but you're buying them with the in-game currency. Then you have the currency that could be used for more time-based things.
Yes, they tend to divide them up, don't they? Well, speaking of games and companies doing rather well in the field of in-app purchases and free-to-play games, there was a report that went up on Pocket Gamer Biz this week by the absent Keith Andrew, which talked about the most successful companies in the mobile field. The names that came up, I mean, you may not be familiar with the names, but you might be familiar with the games. Like, for example, there's a big list of
iOS revenue during May.
Yeah. And you might think some, you know, big names, things like Gree, the big old mobile, and DNA, those platform type things. It was always very vague when you describe them and everything, but you call it a platform and they say it's not a platform, but it sort of is.
Yeah,
Gree and Kabam and, you know, popular companies like Gameloft and EA, and you think, well, that, you know, they'll be up there. And it's like, not really. They are a bit. EA, which has a total number of apps, 829 apps they have to their name, are number four in the list of the monthly revenue in May. Number one is a company that has two games, and it's the company we were just talking about, Supercell, who have, I think it's Clash of Clans we were just talking about, and is it Heyday, is that right?
Heyday, yeah.
Those two games have put them at number one and is kicking the ass out of EA with their 830 games.
I mean, in terms of the games that EA is actually making the money off that puts it in that list, I would think it's about, you know, it'd be like certainly 50 would be the most, I would think.
Sure, of actually profitable games at the moment.
Yeah, actually doing meaningful revenue. Yeah.
So Supercell is kicking everyone's ass at number one. Second in the list is Gung Ho Online, which, again, you might not know the name, but they're the guys behind Puzzle and Dragons, which is it's another match three kind of puzzler, isn't it? It's been very, very, very big in Japan. You can get it in some Western territories. We don't have it in the UK yet.
It's in the US, Canada, Korea.
Yeah.
I think are the places it's gone live. I was talking to the guys actually when I was in Helsinki last week. And literally, they launched that game. It was developed by 4 people, and now they're like 20 people. And the guy was just like, you know, we've got to get more people. We're just so constrained in terms of the time we've got to do stuff now. And you know, when you've got that many people kind of playing it. So when they're making that much money anyway, it's not like we desperately need to get it released in the UK or Germany. I'm sure it'll happen at some point. But
yeah, it'll eventually turn up. But that's done amazing business. And the other company that you were hanging out with, these are all your buddies, John. In the top list here, is King. And King are the guys responsible for the game you probably heard of, because everyone seems to have heard of it, whether they're young, old, white, brown, blue, pink, is Candy Crush. Candy Crush Saga.
Oh, always got a saga.
Which started out life as a Facebook game in 2012, and then got put onto mobile, and everyone just went absolutely bananas for it. It, once again, is another match three puzzler, which seems to be the way into the hearts. Bejeweled has a lot to answer for. Actually, I should probably double check what the origin of the match three puzzler was. I don't know who claims that as their very own idea. Even Ron Gilbert, like Monkey Island guy, released one recently for mobile. It was the Pirates, Puzzle Pirates, something like that. Scurvy Scallywags, that's what it was
called.
That's right. Mm. Yeah, mm. Plush looking one, has a little bit of a plot going on and it's all meta, but it's still just a match three puzzler. It seems to be, you know, along with the Endless Runner and the Tower Defense, it's probably the go-to genre.
Well, I think the other thing with King's stuff is that it's because they have a web portal kind of thing that they've run, that's where they kind of trial a lot of their games. Back in the day, you know, they basically have like a lot of very simple, say, bubble poppers or match three games, and they've just like all different themes.
Sure.
So I think they got like 300 games on their web portal if you go to king.com, and they're like very simple flash games. And then basically what they did very cleverly, obviously, well, not that cleverly, but quite smartly, I suppose, is obviously they just looked to see which one's the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
And then those were the ones that they thought, well, you know, well, those the ones we'll bring to Facebook first. And obviously all the King games, so basically their formula is find a very casual gameplay, you know, really polish it, and then the saga part of all their games is basically all their games can be played on Facebook or mobile. Mm-hmm. And you basically use Facebook. Well, obviously Facebook, you have to use Facebook Connect, but I think on mobile it's kind of, you know, they reward you with like in-game currency if you connect your mobile game to the Facebook game. And of course, as soon as you do that, you see because all the saga things have like a little map screen, so the levels are done in a map. You can just see it'll have, oh, James is on level 9 and I'm on level 8, and every time you play a level, you see all the people, all your friends on Facebook and what their score is. And so it says it's a very social aspect, and you can kind of gift things to people. And so I started playing Candy Crush Saga last week, and immediately I was having, generally female friends just like, you know, gifting me things and asking for requests and blah blah blah, and it just adds that extra kind of retention, that extra
I've seen people writing stuff about that actually, how Candy Crush will make you a better friend because of this social aspect.
I wouldn't go that far, because it's exactly the same thing that kind of happened with Farmville back in the day, but now it's kind of hidden. It's these kind of things are hidden within the game rather than being splashed all over Facebook. But it is fascinating, having spoken to the King guys fairly extensively, you know, because the new one is Pet Rescue Saga.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's one. And they got another one. They got
Bubble Witch, isn't it?
There's a farm. Yeah, Bubble Witch was the first one. Mm-hmm. And then they got a farm one as well, which is on Facebook at the moment, which is coming out. So they have a very kind of structured approach. They've got this kind of these games that they know if they're successful or not, they can put out new games. I think they still put out new games like once a week on the website, on the web portal, and they can just see which ones are gaining traction, then they can like push them out. And basically, you know, you kind of, it's the same thing that did kind of happen with Zynga. You know, everyone was kind of playing Farmville for a while, and then a new whatever Cityville came out, and then a certain proportion would then go and try that out. And because if all your friends start playing a new game, you're like, oh, I'll try it out, see what it's like.
Yeah.
And so these companies, I mean, hasn't really worked for Zynga in terms of mobile stuff now, but they can, once they have a player, they can kind of push them from game to game. As long as they have a new game coming out every couple of months, then you can kind of keep those people within your kind of experience for, you know, for a year or so, which is obviously pretty valuable.
Yeah. Unless you're Supercell, in which you just keep them in the one game forever. Because they all seem to love it. Or the two games in this
case. No, I mean, the Supercell thing is really odd because they don't really have any cross-platform. You know, there's no point in having cross-platform between a fairly hardcore, I mean, not fairly hardcore, but some sort of core-ish strategy game and a farm game. I mean, I'm sure there are some people in the industry who play both just because, you know, they just want to see what's going on and want to see how successful they are. But I can't believe there's many high-end Clash of Clans players who also, you know, are highly ranked in Heyday. I mean, they're just like quite disparate groups of people. So, well, but
managed when you talk to cover them both, didn't they?
Yeah, but when you talk to them about it, I mean, they are literally quite amazed about the success they've had. I mean, they are lovely people, the people who set up the company. I mean, they're very experienced mobile developers. They've been making mobile games for over 10 years. Mm. So and that's part of the reason they've been so successful. They know what they're doing. But, I mean, they are absolutely gobsmacked. It's like, what? I think equally for the CEO now, it's almost like a bit of a burden for him. It's not what he wants to be known for. He loves making games.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there'll be many people willing to shoulder that burden.
Like, yeah, a nice problem to have, isn't it?
tough luck there. Well, I'd be interested to see if anyone can... The next thing that will turn up and topple one of these guys, or indeed how long these populars will last. I'll be interested to see what happens when Puzzle and Dragons comes over here, because I'll finally get to play it and see if it's any cop. Yeah, that's probably the news for this week. However, we do have a couple of high-profile new releases that are out right now. One really old one from the PlayStation era that might be of interest to racing fans. Let's tell you about them. It's the new releases. First up on the new releases, we have a game from the distant past. Codemasters have released Colin McRae Rally. Technically, it's not the original one. It's a release of Colin McRae Rally 2.0, which was brought out on the PlayStation. They've spruced it up a little bit, but it's still pretty much the same game, which, you know, for better or worse, obviously these things do look a little bit older now. PlayStation.
Original PlayStation?
No, yeah, yeah. Original PlayStation
2. Original PlayStation, really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it does look a little bit on the, you know, it's got those old textures and everything, and it looks like a PlayStation 1 game, basically. But it was a kind of really good one, and the franchise has always had incredibly solid kind of core mechanics. The physics have always been really strong, and, you know, that's the admirable thing about them. They kind of captured the rally experience pretty damn well. There are a few things they've removed, so you can't mess around with the gears anymore. You can't use manual sort of transmissions because of the nature of the mobile games. They can't do the gear shift, so it's handled automatically. You're just speeding up, braking, and obviously tilting left and right. Apparently, apart from the, you know, slightly old, dated looking visuals, it's a pretty damn good port. It works real well, and the physics kind of transfer onto the mobile platform pretty solidly, which is kind of good news. You can get it for £2.99, $4.99. It's just out this very moment. So go and have a look. I think our review is up. I think we gave it a bronze. I think we said, yeah. Here's one I've been playing. I'm going to talk about it a lot more later. League of Evil 3, which is Ravenous Games' supposedly their bookend to this whole League of Evil series. Yeah. It's a precision platformer in the vein of, I don't know, Super Meat Boy or something like that. Very, very sort of simple looking environments, all very right angles and straight lines and whatnot, but very, very punishing level design that really requires you be absolutely spot on or you're just going to die. One touch is death, and oh, death is always, always lingering over your shoulder. I'll give you my official little rating of it a little bit later on, but you can get it right now. It is, oh, actually doesn't say how much it costs. Nuts. Oh, it's, yeah, £1.49 or $1.99. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. What else have we got? Oh, yeah, Crescent Moon Games. Josh Precision and his lot. Siegecraft TD. So it's another tower defense one. This is not entirely by Crescent Moon. It's been worked with Blowfish Studios as well. Yep. It's a really pretty one. They've done some of the tower defense ones either go for a more minimal 2D thing like Kingdom Rush, where it's all cartoony. This is your full 3D.
I saw this when I see it. GDC, I think.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it looks really nice. Yeah, really. I mean, I guess the whole thing about whether tower defense is either your thing or it isn't.
Yeah, I know.
I kind of wonder actually whether the 3D aspect of it just makes it a bit more accessible to people, and you can move the camera angles around and stuff. I mean, it's really obviously Blowfish know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they've done a lot of these kind of games. So
I almost think that the having it 2D sort of simplifies it. There's less to worry about with Kingdom Rush because it's all on screen. You don't really zoom in, zoom out. It's just.
You don't have to with this one. I mean, the 3D-ness, can you have the fixed camera angle and just put it. It's not confusing, I don't think, to play really. But I think it could add something to it.
Sure. Well, you can get that right now. It's £1.99, $2.99. It does look very pretty. I haven't played this one yet. We'll have to see. The review will be up pretty soon. Yes, if you are a tower defense guy, then this will probably float your boat. This is one I'm about to review, so I've been curious about it. It's called Anodyne Mobile. So it's a mobile version of a PC release that is essentially kind of a love letter to the Zelda franchise, the original Zeldas, back on the SNES. So it's a top-down RPG, old pixel art style graphics, naturally. It's all quite moody and quite ambient, which I'm sort of a fan of. The PC version got plaudits, people liked it, and it's just arrived. Apparently the controls not maybe quite as strong as they would be on the PC, so you have to put up with the touchscreen thing, but it's by no means broken or unplayable. There's been a lot of endless runners, there's been a lot of tower defense and things like that, and I'm up for an old-fashioned RPG that I can get stuck into. For a bit, frankly. All these Twitch games and all these, 5-minute things. I'd like to play something a bit more lengthy. And this looks nice. So you can get that now. It's $1.99, $2.99 as well. This one interested me somewhat because it's sort of a weird departure from what I hear. Leighton Brothers, Mystery Room. This is by Level 5. It's a Professor Leighton game. Only it's not. Yeah, exactly. Even though it wears the Leighton name, so it's called the Leighton Brothers and everything, and it's doing a murder mystery thing that actually has a great deal more in common with something like Ace Attorney. From what I understand, it was developed as an independent game, and then they decided to make it a Leighton game later in development. So they've essentially sort of bunged the name on the end.
Is that good? I mean, it's kind of when you have...
I don't know.
Seems a bit silly when you have such a... People have such strong expectations of what they're going to get from a Leighton game.
Yeah, and this sort of flies in the face of that. So instead of being those cute little puzzles that you get, and it's all very, relaxed and like a country stroll, the Professor Leighton games, this is much more, say, like Ace Attorney. So it's kind of murder mystery investigations, and some of it goes into quite a lot of gory detail about, people getting stabbed in the face and that. Yeah, which doesn't seem all that latent to me. But you basically have to analyze the murder scene. So you've got a corpse slumped over a table in this case. You can move the camera around, check out everything, poke and prod and investigate the crime scene. Then you have to go back and interrogate people afterwards, see who's lying, see who isn't. So in that way, very much Ace Attorney. The twist here is that it's the investigator, you are Professor Layton's son. So that's how they're tying it into the Layton franchise. From what Mark said, he's played it for a bit. It's not quite as smart or as sharp as the Phoenix Wright games, but it is in its own way quite charming and quite good fun. And if you like that mystery thing, which I quite kind of do, whether it's called Layton or not, it's quite engaging, quite enjoyable. So I'm sort of up for that. You can download it for free. I get the impression it's one of those where you can play the first few cases free of charge, and then later on, if you want to pick up more, you have to pay for it. So you can at least test it out, see what you think. Professor Layton goes all dark and grimy and murdery. Is there anything else new that you often turn up and say?
Oh yeah, there's a few kind of interesting ones. There's a version. I think there's a new version. I'm not exactly sure actually what the genesis of this one is, but there's a Contra.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about
Contra's
Contra.
Out.
Yeah. It's a sort of retooling of the original game.
Yeah, I've given it a quick. I mean, I wouldn't know whether it's the original Contra or not, but it's a looks as you would imagine a Contra game to look pixely and gunny and that kind of stuff. it's interesting because it's an official thing, so it's published by Konami, but it's developed by a Chinese company called they're called Punch Box, I think.
It was released in China a couple of months back, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, it turned out. Well, we covered it because we were like, is that real or is this some kind of knockoff? Because we weren't sure if it had been some unofficial imitation clone thing.
Yeah.
But apparently it is Konami official.
So it's
deets.
Called Contra Evolution. And it's kind of weird because there have been a few Contra games in the past. I mean, I had a quick look at it and you have various options. So you have like the fixed virtual controls, or you have the kind of like a sliding, like a sliding virtual stick and stuff. It strikes me it would be brilliant for all these controllers that are now coming up, but obviously that's on Android. So yeah, so there's Contra's out. There is Dyna Dash, the much, I don't know, loved or, I don't know, certainly well-known time management game. That's come out with a Rush version.
Oh, right.
So Dyna Dash Rush. So it's basically, you don't really get, you don't get the campaign thing where you're going along kind of opening up new restaurants. Basically, this is just like a Rush thing where it's like a, they have a weekly leaderboard. So you're basically just kind of going in there trying to get the high score you can. And I mean, I have reviewed this game. Like, I mean, it was certainly the first game to come out and do that kind of time management, cleaning up type thing. It was, you know, a new experience and something different.
Yeah.
I'm not the kind of person who's going to play that over and over again to get the, because like a lot of these games, it all boils down to like putting together combos and kind of things in the right order to kind of get multipliers and stuff, which is a bit too OCD for me. but it's kind of, you know, interesting. And PlayFirst are kind of pushing quite heavily into. I mean, they're just a pure mobile company now, so it's kind of interesting.
Right.
That they're doing that kind of stuff. And what else was there? Was Eden to Green? Was that this week or last week? Eden to Green.
I think that's this week.
Yeah, so that's kind of interesting. It's like a game from Zynga, or probably from Zynga, but developed by Innis, which is the Japanese developer behind Elite Beat Agents. And
oh, right.
A lot of rhythm games, actually, but the Eden to Green is the evil kind of like oil machinery stuff is taking over the lovely green land, and you're like playing, you have to kind of protect a tree from these kind of nasty tractor things coming towards you. But it's a bit like Plants vs. Zombies, so you're kind of setting down certain plants that like will fire at them, and certain plants will be like support plants, but it's all in 3D.
All right.
So it's quite interesting. I saw it's been the thing that's been in soft launch for a while now, so obviously been playing around with the tweaking on that. Interesting. So it's certainly very kind of Japanese kind of ecological theme to it. Uses Unreal Engine as well, which is so graphically it's kind of quite shiny and stuff.
Okay.
And the Assault Wave as well, which I did mention a while back, which is from a small Finnish developer, and it's basically a kind of weird, kind of slightly hardcore World War II strategy game but it's designed to be played effectively on like two people on one iPad. Obviously, you can play against.
Oh, you did mention that.
And basically, you have kind of the battlefield. It's all like proper World War II tanks, and you have like tanks and artillery and flamethrowers and all kind of stuff. So it's very simple. You kind of just place them down and they kind of like trundle towards the enemy. You don't control what they do, but gotcha. So it's kind of like placement of unit. That kind of stuff. So that's kind of interesting.
Weirdly, say World War stuff. I was playing a Sid Meier's Ace Patrol today.
Oh yes, yes. No,
review. And like our reviewer wasn't one of the other guy that is on AppSpy wasn't so keen on it. I was playing it. I was actually quite enjoying it. It's a bit weird because it's taking that turn-based effect of the Sid Meier, you know, Civ games where it's all hexagons and stop start. It's a bit weird when it's a plane because it kind of goes wood.
You kind of lose a bit of the suspension of disbelief, don't you? It's kind of I thought that was really an interesting game, and I kind of thought it's obviously Sid Meier. I mean, not everything he does is brilliant, but you know, he knows how to make a good one of those games. I did wonder whether the theme was perhaps not the ideal one.
No, interesting experiment, and
it's done, I mean, it's really lovely, really nice production. I think the people who like it because you get really quite in depth in how you're kind of putting together these moves and stuff, isn't it? So it's kind of,
yes.
I think it would have quite a vociferous kind of niche audience, but more of a PC type game than obviously designed for touch. So not PC in terms of the control thing, but just the mentality of it, I think, was more of a PC audience than necessarily a.
Yeah, possibly. I enjoyed it more than I thought I would, though. I read the review and I was capturing footage going, this is actually quite good fun in a weird sort of stop-starty sort of way.
Kind of standout kind of look, I thought.
It's almost cel-shaded. They do a slight cartoony thing with the planes, and yeah, it's nice. I approved slightly. Anyway, that's not the only thing I've been playing this week, and I'm sure John is the same. So let's have a brief chat about that, about what we've been playing. What we've been playing! Right, I'll go first to break up the constant thing of me talking all the downtime. I've been playing, as I mentioned, League of Evil 3, and oh my god, it's so hard.
I'd want to look at that and thought, ooh, I'm
so hard, but it's really good. I picked it up this morning to do like the review, and I have had to postpone it till tomorrow because I want to capture more footage from later in the game, and I'm not there yet because it's so damn hard. Because I've got to work as well, unfortunately, doing other things. And I don't just want to capture the first two worlds. I want to get the other two as well. And, oh, I mean, like, if you don't know the series, you explained it briefly before, it's a precision platformer. So very simple 2D backgrounds, and you are this mechanized cyborg dude who is trundling through the worlds. There's a briefcase you can collect along the way. You got to punch a bunch of soldier guys, and ultimately you got to run to the very end and punch a scientist in the face, which is quite satisfying, oh, actually.
Is it? Hmm.
Yeah, well, they're the scientists who made you the way you were, and they're going to do a strike on the world, so they deserve a good face punching. And now, when you run up to them and punch them in the face, they do a little cower. They go, no, just before you deck them, which is very satisfying, I must say. It started out looking very pixel arty, and it's now been kind of prettied up. In the second one, they made it look a little bit more cartoony, sort of smoothed out the edges. And they've carried on in that vein here. Very, very sort of classy looking thing. From what I understand, it's going to be the last one. So what they've decided to do, it seems, is we'll just make this one just the most difficult out of all of them. It is so hard at times. Like, there are spikes. That's the thing I'll say that's kind of negative about it. You'll go through, and then, like, I hit level 6, and I just, like, 50 times or 100 times I was there just retrying level 6. And then I got past it, and then I didn't get stuck again until, like, level 11. And then likewise, it comes up in the level 17 is quite hard. So you hit these peculiar spikes. Now, that might just be down to me and the way my brain works. And, you know, I see a particular problem and for some reason I get stuck on it, whereas someone else waltzes straight through. Or it might just be something to do with the design and there are these big spikes. I've been talking to Harry, who has been reviewing it for Pocket Gamer, and the review's just gone up. And he experienced the same thing. There would just be particular levels that you just get, you know, brick wall stuck on. Which can be incredibly frustrating because you're just trying to get through and open up the rest of it. But when you complete it, it's a genuine, like, fist pump, God, yes, kind of moment, you know, because you've been trying at it so hard. And there is always the feeling with it that it's kind of not the game's fault, or there clearly is a solution and you're not seeing it, or you're not reacting fast enough, or you're not, you know, you're not doing the right thing. It's never because there's a glitch or it stutters or you get stuck in the geometry or anything like that. They've always been quite polished and only become more polished as the series has gone on. And this is kind of continued in that tradition. It's very smart looking. The controls are excellent. And this is the thing we've always held up Ravenous Games kind of on a pedestal for, this because they are the company that, at least to me, and I know to a couple of other people, sort of proved you can do precision platforming on a touchscreen. Because, you know, traditionally it's very difficult to do that, but they've got the controls just right. The way the character reacts to your tapping left or right, it's different for every series. You know, Mario has that thing where you press forward, and when you release it, he kind of trundles on for a little bit longer, and everyone has their own specific mechanics. What they do here, what League of Evil is kind of the perfect example, if you ask me, of this is how you do platforming. And the third one is kind of, it's as good as the rest. I think it's harder. It feels harder than the other two. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on your, like, tolerance for punishment, I suppose. But I have that thing where I am still being drawn back to it. Like, even though I'm obviously playing it because I need to review it and everything, but I am finding myself wanting to play it just to prove to myself I can beat it, which is kind of a really nice feeling in a game, you know, that I want to prove myself to it. No one's going to be proud. No one's going to care. You know, no one's going to pat me on the head for it other than me. But it's just that personal satisfaction. I want to prove that I can do this. And that's a really good feeling. So it's out right now, and, you know, £1.50, I think it is. And it's really good. And if this is, I kind of hope they do make this the last one and then go on to something else. They put out quite a lot of stuff. Ravenous Games. So they did Infestor, and there was one called Gravity Duck, and there's another franchise, something to do with Heroes, Random Heroes is theirs as well. So they've got plenty of properties going on, and if they knock this one on the head and move on to something else, that would be a very nice end to the series, a very high quality run, you know. And it's always nice when people bow out on a high. So if you like the platformers, League of Evil 3, highly recommended, but I warn you, it's tough. So make sure you Velcro the iPad to your hand for when you rage quit and throw it at a wall, inevitably. But, John, what have you been playing this week?
I'm behind the times a bit, I guess, from my travelling. I played Icebreaker, which I did quite like, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Um, I found I didn't play, I didn't get that much in kind of through it. I kind of thought they quickly went from you're kind of cutting ice to rescue Vikings to suddenly you're kind of like trying to avoid goats and send the goats the other way.
Oh yeah.
It seemed like they kind of quite quickly was kind of changing stuff up. I think we had a bit longer, just kind of like with the Vikings before it all got goats and stuff, because that kind of adds a bit more randomness into it. So in some of the levels, I think, where it's just you don't do anything wrong, but it just goes wrong.
The goat ones were a little bit tough, I found as well.
But I did really like. I kind of thought the mechanics really really nice. The kind of chopping through ice and how things fall down and quite nice. Also playing Mickey, which is obviously the Disney Where's My Water, which is really well put together. I mean, it's not doing anything amazingly different from the Where's My Water thing, but just a nicely done kind of not really a reboot, but it's because they are rebooting Mickey Mouse as a animated short series. So I think they've got like 19 3-minute shorts that have been completely created from scratch using a slightly more 1950s version of Mickey, which is a bit more like the whole kind of rubber hose animation. And
I noticed it looks a little bit more old school.
Yeah, I saw a couple of them when I was over at E3. They showed us a couple of the animated shorts, and they are really nicely done. I mean, they're much, because I don't know, for me, Mickey Mouse was always a bit boring. It was always a bit like dull feel, you know. But when he came out, like American mothers complained that Mickey Mouse was like too naughty and like encouraging their children to do bad things. But he was doing stuff with like guns and smoking cigars and things. So
it was a different time. When the Flintstones were advertising for like Laramie cigarettes or something.
Yeah, exactly. So but it's really really nicely done, I think.
Okay.
I think Disney's doing a good job of that. And the one I've been kind of playing the most, because I'm reviewing it, which is a bit embarrassing because I've been reviewing it for quite a long time now, is Fast and Furious 6, the game.
Still? You're still on that?
Well, I'm still playing it. I've not had a chance to write the thing up. It's embarrassing, isn't it? But it means the review will be very coherent or whatever.
It'll be out of the box office by this point. It'll be on to Fast 7.
It will be, yeah.
The fastening.
I'm obviously not very good at it, but I've not got very far. But it's kind of interesting. So I've been playing it, not spending any money, and then I kind of thought, well, you have to really spend some money if you're going to review it just to see how they're spending money thing. And it was quite interesting that it gets grindy quite quickly. So unless you're playing it a lot, the money you can win is kind of stays the same. Well, obviously the updates that you need for your car to get to the next level are getting much kind of multiples versions of what you can win on you get like five petrols per go. So you get five attempts to do something. And then you have to wait half an hour for it all to refill, as in right. CSR racing, those kind of things. So I was kind of progressing. Okay. And the nice thing they have is they have like the daily races. So every weekday you get like a daily challenge, and it's not your car. You just get a random car. Mm-hmm. And you race it, and basically, unless you're incompetent, you won't. You'll always win those three races. So it's kind of like designed, obviously, to keep you coming back, kind of thing.
Gotcha.
So that gives you some amount of money. But I was kind of struggling to kind of get through. I'll spend some money to upgrade a few things, and then of course you spent the money and you upgrade, and then you kind of win the next round of races. It's quite easy to win, but then really quickly, I kind of found I was kind of back to kind of where I'd been before.
Oh really?
So I kind of felt a little bit like I'd spent. I mean, it wasn't that much. It was like seven quid or something, 6 quid. What would it have been? It would have been, £7. So that's $10. And that got used up really quickly. I kind of think I was actually chatting with someone from Kabam, who are the makers of the game, yesterday about it. Mm-hmm. I think Kabam are have been proven to be very clever how they monetize things. But in this case, I was still on the first. I'm still in the first area. I've almost finished the first area, right. And it seemed to be the stage where you'd have to grind pretty hard to get out of the first area, which I thought was perhaps a little bit extreme. But anyway, it's a very nice looking game. Anyway,
The screenshots are very pretty, and I've seen it running. It looks good, but no, that's exactly the kind of thing that makes me wobble on the free to play. The idea of like 7 quid, and I still within a few hours I'm back to square one again.
Yeah.
Essentially,
I mean the annoying thing was I didn't really want to spend the money just on the upgrade stuff. I wanted to go, I'll get a new car, because at least then a new car is like a project where you can start upgrading. Because the problem is I pretty much maxed out the original, the tier one car I had. Mm-hmm. And so some things I couldn't even update anymore because I'd upgraded them all. Because if you buy a new car, you can kind of start, and obviously if you're winning a little bit of money, you can start updating stuff, because the beginning It's kind of much cheaper.
Sure.
But obviously the cars are locked, so until you get out of the first area, you can't unlock a level 2 car. So you can't even spend like 20 quid buying a new car that will get you, that will wheeze you through the first level. So I mean, you can buy, there are three different cars you could buy. So I could have bought a slightly better car within tier 1, but then obviously if I'm going to go straight up to tier 2, that's a waste of money, because if I'd bought that original tier 1 better car, my car's now, because it's pretty much tricked out, it's much better than the one I could buy. So that was pretty pretty silly. So anyway, but
tricked out, get you. You have been playing this for a while, haven't you?
But I do think it's interesting that there's these three racing games at the moment. So there's the original drag racing, which is by far and away the most hardcore one, and the least nice looking. It's pretty much 2D, really. Then there's CSR Racing, which now has the multiplayer kind of stuff in there, and then there's Fast and Furious, which is by far and away the simplest to do. I mean, it's pretty, you don't need an awful lot of skill really to perform the things they want you to do. And that's probably the most polished, but as you expect it to be, because it's the one that's been most recently released. Interesting to, I'm not a particularly petrol head, but I'm kind of getting more into these ones. So
I played one, weirdly enough, I played one on a Java, which is essentially, they started doing them on Java, because I guess, you know, same thing, success, because it's quite easy to replicate, isn't it? Because it's just the gear shifts, generally speaking.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it's just a single tap, isn't it?
It works the same way. It was a horrible game, the one I played. Okay. But I played CSR for a bit, and yeah, I can see how it can be sort of compulsive, and it plays to people who like to customize, you know, anyone who likes to pour money into, oh, I've got a custom number plate and I made the decals a bit shiny and all that.
Well, I guess, and yeah, the funny thing is, not funny thing, but the other interesting thing is, there's a new version of drag racing coming out this summer, and I think there's a new version of CSR Racing coming out as well, so we're going to get into the next kind of refresh.
Phase 2.
Of those games quite quickly, and they're all, the talk to developers are all very competitive.
I bet they are, yeah.
With each other, so I think there's some quite interesting stuff for people who like those kind of like drag racing type games.
Well, something for the petrol heads among you to look forward to. That probably wraps it up for this week. Join us again next week. We'll have a slightly bigger crew next time out. I'm sure Peter will have returned from Amsterdam, probably looking sketchy and forgotten where he lives and surrounded in a cloud of smoke, I expect. And possibly Keith as well. Thank you for joining me again, John. It's nice to have you back. Catch you all sometime in the near future. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.